Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Denver International Airport is huge. The airport property is the size of a major U.S. city, the perimeter fence longer than the distance between Denver and Boulder. And on Friday, somebody got through it, went onto a runway, and was hit and killed by a plane, a bizarre incident that's made international news. Our Mark Salinger looks at the challenge of securing DIA.
DIA is kind of in the middle of a bunch of fields. It's the largest airport in the country by landmass, and it's not really even close. But as we saw this week, that presents some unique security challenges.
Along 36 miles of fence, barbed wire is designed to keep intruders out as cars patrol the perimeter. But securing an area twice the size of Manhattan isn't easy.
One of the biggest issues is how vast it is. There are miles and miles of fence and property, very obscure places, places that nobody expects to, you know, see on a regular basis.
That's 9 News aviation analyst Greg Fife. We don't know all the specifics of the airport's security layers, but we do know there are cameras everywhere, even in the dark. They capture the person walking on the runway 2 minutes after they jumped the fence.
The biggest question with this particular event is, how did this person breach that operational area, getting over a 12-foot fence with razor wire?
Denver's airport sits on more than 33,000 acres, or about 52 square miles. Compare that to Dallas-Fort Worth, the next largest airport in the U.S., at around 17,000 acres, or 26 square miles. The third largest is Washington Dulles, at nearly a third the size of Denver. Back in 2015, news organizations published an Associated Press investigation detailing perimeter breaches at U.S. airports. The AP found 8 in 11 years at DIA. While we don't yet have updated numbers, incidents like what happened on runway 17 left on Friday night are not common.
These are rare events when you have somebody breaching the operational side of an airport, especially an international airport.
Rare, even for an airport larger than the entire city of San Francisco.
I asked the airport today if they could share more about their perimeter security, almost full well knowing that the answer would be no. All they said back to us was that they use a combination of technology and they perform continuous fence inspections. Kyle, hopefully we'll learn more eventually.
That far side of the airport, I think, is something that people don't really think about. They certainly don't visit.
Yeah, when you come in on Peña Boulevard, you're kind of guided through every step, through security, to your gate, everything. But on the other side, on the east side of Denver International Airport, you're almost just driving through fields, and then all of a sudden there's an airport that pops up.
Yep.
There are a bunch of no trespassing signs, private property, stay away. To get to the actual airport, you have to pass a lot of those before you actually get to the fence.
Mark Salinger, thank you. There was a second Frontier flight waylaid by a security issue at DIA this weekend. Passengers had to get off of a plane last night after an ammunition magazine was found on board. Frontier says it was left behind by a law enforcement officer. That flight was headed Denver to Phoenix. When the magazine was found, passengers went back through security screening again. The airline says the plane also went through a security sweep, which did not turn up any other concerns. Frontier says their preliminary investigation suggested a law enforcement officer on a previous flight left the ammo magazine behind. Frontier policy allows adult passengers to travel with unloaded firearms and ammunition in checked bags only. The FBI tells us they're still looking at whether this was a criminal case. Wildfire west of Loveland has some people evacuated from their homes tonight. It started burning near Carter Lake just before 3 in the afternoon. Evacuations have been ordered for the Sedona Hills neighborhood, which is northeast of Carter Lake. Fires burned about 30 acres at this point. Berthoud Fire says there are 2 planes and a helicopter working along with ground crews. The Red Cross is standing by to help families at the Grace Place Church. As black and yellow smoke billowed out of the Suncor refinery in Commerce City today, Suncor said, as they always do, nothing to see here. For anyone who breathes air and is interested in a bit more information, here's what we've learned. Suncor says their refinery in Commerce City had a power outage after an Xcel transmission line tripped early this afternoon, and the smoke was a result of increased flaring as the refinery got things back up and running. Suncor said its own air quality monitors and other air quality monitors in the community did not find the air to be hazardous. If Suncor did release pollutants today in violation of its state air quality permit, we don't find out right away. The refinery has to file a notice with state regulators in the near future. But folks nearby are understandably concerned.
Our next question tonight comes from a viewer named Kelvin, who saw the smoke pouring out of the Suncor refinery and asked simply, what is this and should I be breathing it?
Well, Kelvin, I wish I had better details for you, but we do know a bit about the pollutants that Suncor typically releases into our air. And it's not great news for Coloradans with lungs. Air quality regulators recently reviewed a full year of Suncor's emissions from 2022, in which the facility was Colorado's number one emitter of volatile organic compounds. It's a wide-ranging category of industrial pollutants that might have short or long-term health impacts. Suncor also cracked Colorado's top 10 polluter list for some specific pollutants like sulfur dioxide, carbon monoxide, and nitrogen oxide. It's a good question, Calvin. Keep sending in your next questions. Anything you wonder about Colorado, I guarantee you somebody else has the same question. We welcome written and video questions. Email them to next@9news.com or text next 303-871-1491. President Trump is changing the way America's immigration system works in ways seen and unseen. Two former immigration judges in our state tell us it was clear early in Trump's second term it would be harder for them to deliver fair outcomes for immigrants. They sat down with our Angeline McCall for tonight's next conversation.
This conversation is about a decision they never expected to make.
I was on the Denver bench for 5 years and a few months.
And then I came to the Denver bench in March of 2023.
Carrie Calcedor and Andrea Copenhofer are both former immigration judges.
You both stepped down in 2025 around May. Tell me about that decision and what led you to that.
Yeah, I think shortly after the inauguration, it may have even been the day after, when I returned to the office and there were a slew of emails with executive orders that had titles like protecting the state and the people from invasion. I was very concerned that those were red flags to me. And then I would say I knew that I was going to need to find a different place.
One of the policies that really made me pause and think about whether this was going to impact my role as an immigration judge was a policy encouraging the immigration judges to deny asylum applications on their face without a hearing. I felt like that was not going to be fair.
Did you feel like you guys still had independence as judges on the bench, or was it being more guided by these executive orders or policies?
I think we had some independence. The due process requires us to follow statutes and case law, but you could tell it was being slowly taken away in one way or another by increasing the demands on how many cases we were to be completing.
They also instituted metrics that were being applied to judges.
By increasing the benchmark for the judges that remain at the immigration court, I think they're really put between a rock and a hard place, because the judges all want to give due process.
Anytime you introduce metrics or you politicize or put pressure on judges to complete things, cases, of course, it's going to rush due process, and that's something you don't want.
Do you think it's harder for immigrants today to have more fair outcomes on their immigration cases because of these policies?
I do, and I still tell my clients today, they ask me, can I get a fair hearing at immigration court without a lawyer, or do I really need a lawyer? And I would say, when I was the immigration judge, I never felt like someone needed to have a lawyer. It's harder now for people, for sure.
So both of you have been really clear that you left before maybe you expected to or anticipated to. What kind of long-term impact does this do on the immigration system if other judges continue to leave because they don't want to continue to adhere to policies like this?
I think it is going to have a very adverse long-term effect, because you're losing people who have the decades of knowledge and experience.
So I think that it really damages the rule of law to fire or discourage longevity on the bench.
Since leaving, Carrie started her own low bono law practice to help people with Andrea's counsel. It's called Asylum on a Budget with Counsel. They have helped dozens of families with their asylum paperwork and offer this resource to families to guide them on how to self-represent themselves in court. So, Kyle, they actually simulate court hearings, for instance, and they guide them on, you know, this is what the judge might say, and this is how you could respond, so that people who may not have a resource to pay for a traditional representation situation, this is something available to them.
That's a really interesting perspective. What do we know about the landscape of how many immigrants come into an immigration court with representation in Colorado?
Actually, believe it or not, Denver has the lowest rate of representation for people who are within the immigration justice system or the court system. And so this is another reason why they wanted to help out in this way.
Angeline McCall, folks can see your entire extended, unedited Next Conversation on the Next YouTube channel and on 9news.com. Angeline, thank you. You all did something really special for a school full of students, as well as for kids across Colorado battling cancer. Because Swigert International dedicated its annual service day last week in part to the Morgan Adams Foundation, a nonprofit that funds pediatric cancer research in Colorado. Those kids did that in memory of their friend Pippa, who died after fighting neuroblastoma. They built a butterfly garden to remember Pippa. They wrote notes to kids in the hospital. And you raised about $65,000 to fund cutting-edge research into new treatments for children with cancer. This is what you do week after week through your Word of Thanks micro-giving. And we have a new way for you to track the full impact of your giving, $18 million worth over 6 years, and to see where in Colorado you've helped our neighbors over the years. Just go to wordofthanks.org. wordofthanks.org. That's also where you can now nominate a nonprofit that is making an impact in Colorado. You can also apply for Word of Thanks consideration. If you run a nonprofit, I review each one of those nominations and applications personally. So swing by wordofthanks.org and take a look at the immense good that you have done. Forecasters are warning that one of the West's most popular and important reservoirs is nearing a critical level after a historically bad snow season. And a high schooler recognized for truly out-of-this-world ambition.
My end goal is going to be to work on rockets, hopefully.
In the meantime, she's just working on stuff that goes on rockets. That's next. Forecasters have a grim update for one of the West's most important reservoirs after this historically rough winter. They think that Lake Powell is months away from hitting critically low levels. That reservoir on the Utah-Arizona border is one of the largest reservoirs on the Colorado River, and it provides drinking water and hydropower generation for millions of people downriver. Forecasters issued their monthly update recently. No surprise to anybody who saw our lack of snow this season. Things are not looking good. Lake Powell is expected to receive just 13% of its normal spring runoff this year. If that prediction holds, the reservoir is expected to hit its lowest volume on record in the coming months. The Bureau of Reclamation warns that without intervention, generation at the Glen Canyon Dam could stop as early as September. Meteorologist Chris Bianchi, we know what that means then. The water's got to come from somewhere if they want to keep the dam operating, or keep the hydropower operating. So that means it's going to have to be pulled upstream from Colorado. We've only got so much to give.
Exactly right. It's really, when it comes to Lake Powell specifically, it's three different basins that supply the majority of the water to Lake Powell. It's the Colorado River Basin, obviously, that's the majority of it, but it's also the Gunnison and the San Juan Rivers. Those also feed into Lake Powell, and notice those levels. Of course, statewide, it's really bad, but in particular, the southwest part of the state, statewide snowpack, only about a fifth of where it should be at this point of the season. Highs today, 85 in Denver, 90 in Lamar, 60s and 70s, and get used to it. It's going to be pretty warm all week long. Weak cold front tonight will briefly drop our temperatures for tonight and into early tomorrow, but then we see a few showers tomorrow afternoon, mainly south and west of Denver. Pretty isolated stuff. Better chance for some storms on Wednesday, but even here on Wednesday, pretty icy. We're talking about a 30% chance for some showers and storms later this week. Temperatures mostly in the mid to upper 80s for the rest of the week, and then this weekend will cool down. Same for the early part of next week, with a hopefully better chance for rain next week. Again, next Monday and Tuesday looking a bit more hopefully favorable for some needed rain and water for us across the state.
Somebody in your family went to med school? That's impressive. How about an actual rocket scientist in your family tree? Well, that's cool too, but this high schooler kind of has him beat because she has already designed a medical device to go into space. Hey, a reminder, it's not rocket science. You can catch Next streaming each weeknight, 6 p.m. on 9 News Plus. And Next is now a podcast wherever you find those. A student at the Cherry Creek School District is getting some national attention after designing a tool that could one day be used in space. Our Byron Reed has that.
I think it's really cool just like knowing that there's so much out there.
Sam Fuller loves outer space.
There's still so much we don't know about it.
There's almost nothing she doesn't like about the final frontier.
My end goal is going to be to work on rockets, hopefully.
Fuller is a senior at Cherokee Trail High School and recently got an opportunity to fly to Houston to work with NASA.
I was really excited when I first found out I got to go, just because it's something where it's not guaranteed and a majority of people don't get to go.
She's one of five students in the country to present at this year's NASA Hunch.
Hunch stands for High Schools United with NASA to Create Hardware.
A nationwide program that partners schools with NASA centers to design and create real-world products for the International Space Station.
I was prompted with the issue to create an otoscope adapter for a medical device known as the Tempest Pro for its fiber optic camera. So this is what I have for my prototype.
Sam designed a medical diagnostic tool adapter, an attachment that turns a medical device into an otoscope, allowing astronauts to examine ears in space.
My goal was just to create an adapter that would allow a flexible camera cable.
NASA officials were so impressed, they asked to keep her prototype and design files for potential future use on the ISS.
Hopefully, we don't know. I will get an email and I'll be told if so, but I'm not sure yet.
For Sam, the presentation was a small step for a career that's out of this world.
I'm committed to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida for aerospace engineering with a minor in project management.
For next,
if you set your mind to it, you can get there.
I'm Byron Reed.
If Sam's design is chosen to go to space, it'll have plenty of company. The NASA's Hunch program has sent about 1,200 prototypes to the ISS. Well, what we're doing around here is not rocket surgery, but we do it well, Marilyn.
Rocket surgery.
Yeah, rocket surgery.
Crazy.
Yeah. Feedback's next. Feedback tonight from John, who says that he retired from DIA, the airport. He said, "You reporters don't know what goes on at airports. Suicides, accidents, coyotes, animals on the runway. You new reporters, Kyle and Marshall, get the facts before you guys think you know it all." Not to correct you, it was actually Mark Salinger on the story. Marshall and I, we've got about 40 years combined working here in town, but I'm sure there's people with a lot more experience. All that makes sense. I'm sure all that's out there. I'm not sure where we said that it didn't. The key is, how do you better secure the perimeter? Steve says nobody knows how big Manhattan is. Compare it to something in Colorado. DIA is roughly the size of the city of Fort Collins. Does that work? See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.